Hey everyone, this is Steve Mathis. Thanks for listening to the podcast show. Before we begin the show, I just wanted to give a little shout out to my new friends at BTOSports.com. BTOSports.com has teamed up with yours truly to provide you podcast listeners with a cool free deal. What you want to do is go to BTOSports.com and check out all the sweet stuff from Fly Racing, Fuel Graphics, O'Neill, Stella, FMF, Liat, and Vortex. They carry these lines along with pretty much anything else that you need for your bike or body. So you go there. The cool thing is, you order more than $100, and really, what's $100 these days? James Stewart has that much in his Lambo ashtray. Anyways, order more than $100, type in the offer code Mathis, M-A-T-T-H-E-S, in the coupon section, right when you're checking out, and you'll get a special deal. It's so special, they haven't even really told me yet what it is. So to recap, go to btosports.com, spend $100, type in Mathis in the coupon section upon checkout, and get some kind of hella super sweet deal. Remember to check out their closeouts at btosports.com is a proud sponsor of the BBMX race team. All right, on to this week's show.
This is a warning. I repeat, this is a warning. Your brain may explode from listening to this show. We will not be held responsible if it does. What are you going to do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You have been warned.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com podcast show. Brought to you by Transworld Motocross. Hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com Steve Mathis podcast brought to you by Transworld Motocross. On the phone with me while he's driving around running some errands is none other than GL8, Grant Langston. What's going on?
Just like you said, doing some errands. We just got done with round one, and it was kind of funny because after not being at a race for 2 years, I got to the event on Saturday and realized that I was not nearly as organized as I should have been. You know, I forgot a lot of things, whether it was like snacks or, vitamins or drinks or whatever. It just seemed like I was running around with, trying to find where I could, get something to eat and, these kind of things. I forgot a spinning bike to warm up on. I forgot, certain pieces of gear and things like that, or grabbed them at the 11th hour. So it was a little bit stressful, and but it was funny. Now that the weekend's happened, it's like it's all coming back to me, and now I'm kind of doing those errands, trying to make sure I'm organized for this weekend.
Yeah, really. You're like, oh yeah, I forgot about this, and I forgot about that.
Yeah, you forget when, because our motorhome, obviously we unpacked it, because it hasn't really been used a whole lot in the last couple of years, and I got a new gear bag, as an O'Neill, and new gear and everything like that, so it's like, it's a whole new, process, and I'm one of these guys, I'm a creature of habit, so I have to have a step-by-step process to make sure I don't forget anything. And coming to the weekend, I had no game plan, so unfortunately that leads to me being forgetful or not getting things arranged like I should have, but right. They say you live and learn, and out that first race I know all the things not to do for next weekend.
Really. 10th place in the main event, you had to have been happy with that, huh?
Absolutely. I try to explain to people because, they ask, was I happy, this and that. I go, it's so tough because, you think to yourself, how could I be excited with a 10th place finish? Usually that'd be a disappointing weekend. But, given the circumstances and everything like that and just really not knowing what to expect, coming in the weekend, I honestly didn't have any goal whatsoever for a finishing position. Obviously, my goal was to stay upright, not crash, finish the main event, and obviously, ultimately, get into the main event first.
Yeah.
So, once I'd done all those things and I was kind of sitting there before the main, you know, I thought to myself, gosh, how great would it be to get a top 10 finish at my first race back? You know, one, you know, just it just sounds like a good number. You know, 10th place, you know, you're at the top 10, you're in opening ceremonies, you beat half the field, you know, whatever you want to look at it. And I thought that would be a great weekend for me. Stay out of trouble, finish, get a solid result. And it went, you know, it went just like that. And I can't, you know, I almost couldn't imagine how, you know, how that just all unfolded, how, you know, like I would have hoped.
Right.
Because coming in, I said to people, it was like I knew what to expect, but I also didn't know what to expect. So it was a tough position to be in, because it's like, you know what you expect when you go to Supercross. You got fast guys, you got, you know, tough track, you know, the crowd, you know, the intensity, everything like that, you know, because I've been there, I've done that, I know what it's like.
Right.
But then the other things, you don't know what to expect. Have the other guys gotten faster? Have I gotten slower? How am I going to do at race pace? How am I going to do under the lights? I've never ridden under the lights since my eye issue.
Right.
You know, am I going to get arm pumped? You know, am I going to choke? Am I going to blow the start? You know, am I going to get taken out? You know,
yeah.
It's so different when you've just been practicing and you haven't been on the racetrack, because you just, it's hard to get in the race mentality. And, you know, even during the main event, I don't think I've ever in my life had and lost my rhythm so many times, because it was weird. I kept saying, you know, just get in a rhythm, breathe, you know, relax, you're fine. And I get in a rhythm and tag in with some guys, and then I make a bubble, and then I'm like, oh, don't do that. You know, you're going to crash, you're going to blow it, don't do it, don't lose your rhythm. And then I'm like, oh, wait, I'm getting off. Oh, wait, don't forget to breathe. And, you know, it's like, it's just a never-ending story. All I did was have conversations with myself the whole main event. And, you know, but there was definitely a lot of, you know, most of the time I was out there, I think if you could have seen under my helmet, I had probably a little cheesy grin going on, because,
right.
You know, at the end of the day, I really did enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I crossed the finish line and my mechanic was there, you know, he was like, oh, that was great. You know, that was good. That's just what we wanted.
Uh-huh.
And I gave him a high five, and I said, that was awesome. You know, that was nice to have a plan and be able to actually stick to it for the most part and stay out of trouble and stay upright and not crash and not get hurt and live, you know, live to go to round two. So,
yeah.
You know, for me, it was a great weekend. And like I said, sometimes it's hard to think like that, where you get excited over a 10th place. But given the circumstances, you know, for me, it was definitely an exciting way for the season to kick off.
Yeah, really. Now, I mean, did you ever imagine you'd come back? I mean, were there had to have been times that you were just like, forget it, I'm done, right?
You know, yes, there was time, and it wasn't really because I just was like, oh, you know, this is a hassle, or I'm over it, I'm done. It was just because, based off the information I'd been given, it seemed like the chance of coming back as a professional was slim to none.
Right.
And at the end of the day, yes, that would have been my decision, because there's no one saying, oh, well, you can't ride if you only have one good eye and one bad eye. That's a decision that I would have made based on the fact that at our level, you can't have okay vision.
Right,
You got to have, your vision's got to be great. You got to see the shadows, the ruts, the holes, the bumps, the changing of the track. You know, you go through the whoops, they change every lap, you know, and you just hit one hole or one little kicker or anything, and you go to the bars. I mean, you could end up in hospital or in a wheelchair or whatever, you know. And you know, even when I was trying, when I tried riding after my radiation treatment for my eye,
mm-hmm.
In the beginning I struggled, you know, and I even thought, I'm not having fun, I'm second guessing myself the whole time, you know, I feel like I'm not riding comfortably, because I'm got a death grip, because, you know, I don't know if the bike's gonna swap underneath me or what it's gonna do. And it's just, you know, it was just a really difficult situation, but I knew at the end of the day, if my vision wasn't good enough, I wasn't going to try and ride or you know, because I knew I wouldn't have fun, and ultimately I knew it would only be a matter of time before I got hurt,
mm-hmm.
And then I would have been even more frustrated, knowing that at the back of my mind that was always a strong possibility.
Right.
So there was a time where I thought it was done, and it was a hard one to accept. And, you know, obviously due to the fact that one, we caught started early. I traveled around the world to find the best boxers there was available.
Mm-hmm.
But multiple opinions, you know, I did everything in my power to give it the best opportunity to make a good recovery. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm glad that couldn't have gone any better. You know, once it was in the situation where it was a bad situation, you know, from there on out, it's actually gone pretty well. So, you know, there's definitely, you know, other factors that come into play, you know, with radiation treatment. You know, anytime you recover from any sort of cancer treatment, there can be issues and side effects. My immune system got rammed down into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up getting a stomach virus. So, you know, around Christmas time, even up until Anaheim 1, you know, I was throwing up after meals, you know, basically diarrhea, you know, so I was getting dehydrated
because
my body wasn't digesting food. And it was basically rotten inside me and causing me to be sick. So my fitness and stamina and everything was getting pretty good around Christmas time. And then I just got so weak and ran down and things like that. And then the week leading up to Anaheim, being run down and sick, I tried to take it easy and ended up getting a head cold. And then, you know, Saturday morning before the race at 4 a.m., they break into our new shop there in Paris.
Yeah.
And steal a bunch of items, including some very valuable, irreplaceable championship bikes of mine. So, you know, it was definitely a rough period, you know.
Yeah.
And not to mention, I ended up with pneumonia about 6 weeks ago, where
Jeez.
I was basically on bed rest for a while. So, you know, it wasn't the easiest road back to riding. And obviously, you know, I had my knee reconstructed, which is part of what my errands were today, is seeing the doctor. So, I mean, it's not been easy, but I tell you what, you know, when you come back and, you know, I see the amazing, you know, response from fans, from people, even other mechanics and riders and people telling me how, you know, they're so stoked to see me back and, you know, all these things, you know, it makes you feel, you know, really good. I mean, that's the best compliment to have when people say, we've missed you and, you know, the sport wasn't the same without, you know, those kind of things, you know, I'm flattered.
Right.
And then you come and race, and like I said, the main event was probably, from the outside, it looked like it was easy, or I was taking it easy, but inside, you know, like I said, I was coaching myself the whole way through the main, and, you know, eventually getting the top 10, that makes everything worthwhile right there. That just wipes out all the tough days and the tough situations I had to go through for that one result makes it all worth it. And, you know, now that that's out of the way, I'm so excited to be moving on, because I know that this is sort of a rebuilding stage, and there's definitely a lot of room for improvement for me.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that, it's also exciting, because any time you can go and know that you're going to be improving and getting stronger and fitter and more of a threat to the front few riders, it's a great feeling to have, and I'm just looking forward to this sort of journey.
Yeah, I was looking at your lap times. I'm writing my column today, and really consistent lap times. You maybe not have been blazing fast. You started ninth, you finished 10th, doing the same lap times almost every moto. So obviously your fitness is, or you rode within your limits all week, and it ended up in the top 10. So really it can only get better. I mean, theoretically anyways.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't see the lap times, and I'm surprised that they were actually as consistent as you mentioned. But, you know, at the same time, I got
them right in front
of me.
You
know, exactly.
Yeah.
I paced myself from the beginning. I didn't get in any dogfights. You know, like you said, I was ninth probably at the end of lap one.
Yeah.
You know, and there were one or two guys. I know Chad got by me and someone else passed me that ended up near the front. I think it was Ivan. But, I didn't move around a whole lot in the main event. I kind of started mid-pack, finished mid-pack, didn't get any dogfights, stayed out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I definitely rode tight, which caused me to have arm pump and, you know, get tired and things like that. But because I think I'd started off the race probably at about 80%, even though I felt like I was more closer to 90% at the end of the race, I was able to maintain those lap times. And, you know, ultimately each week that consistency is going to need to improve a couple percent speed-wise. You know, like you said, my pace is not there yet, and I know that. And, you know, I feel that I could be a lot closer if I pushed it really hard to try and keep up with those guys. But I don't want to be in a position where I'm sidelined again because I crashed my brains out or, you know, get fading so bad that, you know, you end up crashing because you're tired or whatever it may be. And I feel like, you know, maybe being a little bit older at 27 now, the only thing that probably improved the last 2 years was my ability to teach myself when to go for it and when to play it smart. And that's something I've never been very good at because I used to only have one speed.
That's what I was going to say.
That was as hard as I could go.
Yeah, I was going to say
you,
that. Yeah.
You learn from your mistakes, and I came into the series with a game plan in the sense that I knew I had no shot at the title, and that wasn't even something I thought about. I wasn't even thinking about race or positions to start the season. I just had a plan to qualify and to finish. And then, you know, once that happens, then you start setting more realistic goals. Like, okay, am I looking for top tens? You know, okay, can I run this pace for 15 laps at least, you know, before I get tired? You know, and each week there'll be a different goal, a different, you know, something different that I'm aiming for, looking forward to accomplishing. So, 10th is a good place to start, and I feel that I still have a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, for sure. And I just dug up your lap times. 9 laps in the 1 minute range, 6 laps in the 101. So there's 15 laps right there within a second. So you know that's pretty good. That's pretty key too as well. You had a couple of 103s there. That maybe something shaky happened, but other than that,
well. Yeah. I can't even lie to you. There were a couple laps when I had no one behind me, and I know when I got lapped. The race was so great for the lead. At the end there, after I got lapped by Dungy, I turned around and I saw James just probably 2 or 3 seconds behind him.
Yeah.
And I was thinking in my head, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a great end of the race. So I let James by, and I hate to admit it, but I was watching the race, hitting jumps and looking across, hearing the crowd go nuts.
Yeah,
I was kind of like a bit of a fan there for a while, but I was stuck in no man's land. I couldn't go forward and I couldn't go backwards. I was in this lonely tent.
Right.
And I was trying to not think about how tired I was and think about, wow, that's a great race. What are they doing so much better than me? Why are they so much faster right now? So, like I said, there was definitely a whole bunch of firsts for me on the weekend. You know, I did a lot of things that I've never done before, like watching battles around me go on, letting people by without a fight, those kind of things. But, you know, I just had to tell myself, don't let your ego get in your way or don't let your race mentality take over.
Yeah.
Stick with the game plan. So I'm glad I did that, and it worked out. You know, I stayed upright, and, you know, I think that was one of the biggest things. You know, when you've been away from racing for so many years, you don't want to put all this effort in and come back and then end up in the hospital after the first round. I mean, that was the biggest thing for me was don't crash, don't get hurt.
Which you've been there. You've done that, broken collarbone.
I've done that way too many times in my life, and it's really frustrating. And like I said, you know, you look back, I haven't raced that much in the last couple of years. Well, I haven't raced basically at all.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure that, you know, at the end of the day that I was going to be at Phoenix this weekend and then Anaheim 2 next weekend and, you know, make sure you're there and gaining experience, track time, race pace, and because I want to make sure that when I get to the outdoors, you know, that I'm not going into round one going, oh, you know, I'm just looking for a top 10. You know, by the time the outdoors roll around, I want to be like, dude, I'm back in action, I'm back in shape, I'm ready to hammer, I'm ready to go and fight for race wins.
Yeah, really. How is the eye? Is it 100%? I mean,
what's that say?
How is the eye? 100%?
No.
No?
Definitely not, and never will be. From the radiation treatment, you know, there is going to be some, you know, there is damage caused. The one sort of silver lining is, you know, let's call it this way. By the time I am the age of about 40, I'll probably be either blind or, you know, at least legally blind in my left eye just because from the radiation treatment, the eye will deteriorate at a much more rapid rate.
Oh, okay.
So that, you know, when I'm 40, let's just say, you know, I'm going to have a vision out of that eye of like an 80-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just something that comes with, you know, going through radiation in your eye. There's not a lot of other options. It's that or, you know, the potential of dying. Because, you know, melanoma spreads and it's aggressive. So, you know, I had to make a decision, obviously, which was a pretty easy decision to make. But I would say my eye, it's really hard to put in a percentage-wise, but if I was, you know, I even asked doctors before, what would you give it? And they, you know, they always are like, well, it's tough to say, but it's probably at about 85%.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's not going to get any better whatsoever at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's even hard for them to say, you know, when will it start deteriorating? How quickly will it happen? You know, all these things. But yeah. The doctor seems to think, in his opinion, based on a few cases that he's done with young, fit male, you know, and males in their 20s, he seems to think that I'll have good vision for at least 5 years.
Okay.
And that's great, you know, because I'll be done racing within 5 years. So,
yeah.
You know, beyond that with life, you know, I'll just learn to deal with it. My father has one eye.
Yeah, Pops does well.
Yeah. And, you know, he's learned to deal with it. You know, the biggest thing is I always check his blind spot on his left side because he chops everyone off because he can't see out of his left eye.
Yeah.
And then he'll yell at the other guy, like, why is this guy sitting in my blind spot? I'm like, Dad, the whole left side of you is a blind spot. The guy, if you're in the slow lane, he's passing you, he's got to come up the left. You can't blame him for that one. So, you know, he's learned to deal with it too. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't ever hear him whine or complain to him, you know, nowadays. I mean, I know when he was younger, he had to give up racing himself because of his vision.
Mm-hmm.
I know he came to the first turn of his first race back after he lost his eye. And obviously everyone hit the brakes to make the first turn, and my dad's depth perception was off. And he came in wide open and took out the whole pack, totaled his bike, and sold it that afternoon off the back of his pickup, and that was the last of his racing.
Yeah.
I don't want to end it in that sort of way, but, you know, I'll definitely play it by ear. But, you know, if the doctor's information that he believes is correct, that works out quite nicely. Let's just call it into my professional plan.
Right.
And beyond that, we take it how it comes. You know, who knows, maybe in 5 years they have some sort of a cure to stop that degeneration, or I don't know. You know, with modern-day technology, you know, there's definitely a lot of possibilities out there.
It's that time. Time for a commercial. Sorry, guys. Got to pay the bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off, or Smith Piston goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped to anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at BTOsports.com.
So what kind of stuff gives you trouble on the track, or does anything kind of give you trouble?
It's probably a pretty logical answer. It's the small, fine detail, which at Anaheim I never felt like I struggled, or, you know, like before when I tried riding when my vision wasn't good, you know, especially outdoors, you know, you would hit a hole that didn't seem like that was that square edge or that deep or whatever you want to call it. And you just hit it kind of casually relaxed and the bike just ricochets sideways on you and you're like, oh my goodness, I almost just died. And you're like, I didn't even see that coming. And that's where it was scary, was when you didn't even see it coming. You know, when you know you're going to hit a big hole or get kicked, you brace yourself or anything like that, and you expect it. But when you don't expect things, that's, you know, that's scary. It'd be like driving down the freeway and your car just veers right on you across traffic.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have any confidence to ride. You know, at Anaheim 3 in 2008, in first practice when I was rutted, I had to pull out because I couldn't see the ruts, I couldn't see the wood places,
yeah.
And I was scared.
Yeah.
I was scared to be riding on the track, and that's not a good feeling. And when I was at Anaheim this year, I was a little scared coming into the race because I thought, man, I really hope I don't get out there and get intimidated or get nervous because I'm struggling to see. And I didn't find that a problem. And the track was a little rutted and choppy in that, and I felt like I digested the track pretty well.
Okay.
I think my bad eyes improved a lot, and I think my good eye which was a little bit lazy compared to my left eye, because being left-handed, left eye dominant, I think my right eye is picked up a lot of the slack, you know, picking up the depth perception and, you know, really, you know, like they say, your brain's an amazing thing. And I think that my brain basically made my right eye work and pick up the slack. And I didn't find it an issue. So right. To answer your question, it's sometimes just the smallest, finest details at the outdoor tracks. And but on Supercross, I haven't had an issue yet.
Good, good, good. Regardless of the your condition or anything else, how's the team, the bike, and all that? I mean, you got a late start in your comeback. Never mind you're being off 2 years. You got a late start on it, too. So how is that all coming together, the team and the bike and everything like that?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It was definitely a late start. It was, you know, sort of last minute. It was a late release on the new Yamaha.
Yeah.
It was late in getting team things going. And then even when I did get the 2010 Yamaha, I rode a stock bike for, you know, all the way up until probably right before Christmas. And
wow.
You know, so, you know, it was definitely at times a little, getting a little concerned, because I'm going, hey, guys, you know, the race is around the corner, and we're like, we haven't even tested one day, you know, and you start thinking to yourself, you know, I'm already not where I should be fitness-wise, you know, race pace, you know, I've been off for 2 years, blah, 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 and I'm like, you know, I don't want to come into the season on a stock bike and no testing and, you know, really get hammered by these other guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think everyone worked pretty hard, you know, between Yamaha, you know, the J-Law team organization, and with sponsors that signed deals with the team at the 11th hour, everything sort of came together quite nicely. You know, one of the big concerns anytime you're not on a factory team is the equipment competitive?
Right.
And I think in our case, I think it is. I think that new Yamaha is a fantastic bike right off the showroom floor. I did have the opportunity in my, you know, when I was an unemployed
your hiatus
guy, I rode all the brands, you know, to get a feel for it. And I would say, from an unbiased opinion, that the Yamaha was the best bike.
Yeah.
So that's always a lot easier when you're starting off with a good, you know, a good platform. That makes life a lot easier. And, Yamaha really helped out by getting my engine and things like that, you know, getting the bike running good, you know, with all the GYTR package and, you know, changing the programmable, you know, the electronic fuel injection,
right,
ignition, things like that. So, I mean, my bike's pretty darn strong. I mean, I don't think there's any real difference from when I was a factory Yamaha rider. You know, the new bike is better out of the box, and I probably say it might even be faster than when I was racing Supercross in 2008,
right,
or when I started 2008. So as far as that goes, no complaints. I mean, we definitely haven't had the opportunity yet to try certain things like, you know, engine mounts and, you know, different,
yeah,
you know, I might want to try a different gearbox at some stage. I kind of finding myself sometimes in between gears.
Mm-hmm.
Little things like that, which, you know, at least walk the first race out of the way, and knowing that we have a pretty good platform, you know, just keep making little small changes as we go along, or try things, or, you know, work with Yamaha to improve. And then, as I get faster, stronger, and all these things, I'm sure I'll want more and more changes. But at this point, we only did 3 days of testing, 1 day suspension and clamps, 1 day motor stuff, and 1 day, with pipes, with the FMF guys. And that was really it. And I still thought, man, that's by far the least amount of testing I've ever done. But, you know, we got to Anaheim, and I'm like, you know, everyone came to me after practice, how's the bike? I'm like, bike feels pretty good. I'm like, I'm more worried about myself than the bike at this point. So
right.
I'm like, don't worry. If there's a problem, I'll let you guys know. But right now, I'm just concentrating on myself.
Yeah, really. I know, I'm curious to how the whole Langston J-Law union sort of happened, because I know you and your buddy Sean Hamblin were shopping around looking for a ride, and it seemed like you guys were looking in the direction of doing your own thing, and then maybe the last minute you and J-Law team forces or joined forces. How did that all come about, and how close were you to doing your own deal? And I guess talk about the silly season for you a little bit.
The silly season was definitely, you know, as tough as it's ever been. And you just got to make the most out of it. You know, if you get handed lemons, you know, make lemonade. And there was definitely more riders than there were rides, and you know, budget cuts, and just so much going on that it was like, I was just thinking, man, I got to find a ride, otherwise,
mm-hmm.
what do you do?
Right.
And then the whole thing with the J-Lo Racing thing came about where Sean introduced me to a guy by the name of Gene, and he ended up coming in as a financial partner to help, you know, support and fund a racing program. Due to everything being late as far as getting the Yamahas and just everything the way it worked out, is they basically, you know, Gene pretty much discussed to do something along with J-Lo Racing, sort of as a, you know, let's just call it like a partnership deal or leasing,
mm-hmm.
Leasing space out of a truck or leasing equipment, however you want to describe it. And that's how that kind of worked out. And, you know, also too, for me, at the end of the day, I had to have a backup plan.
Right.
You know, if the finance doesn't come through, where do you have a home? And, you know, with talking with Scott Tukovic, he had said, look, you know, at this point in time, I can guarantee you a home. I can't guarantee you I'm going to be able to pay you, you know, anything on top of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we get more sponsors in, we can look at that. And I think, you know, when some sponsors heard that I was going to be involved with the team, I think, you know, that helped them, you know, to get more sponsors. And also, you know, let's be honest, with Jason and Jail, that was their team at that point.
Right.
It's hard to go to look at sponsors when your only main guy is in jail. So
yeah.
I think a win-win for everyone, the way it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
It was the best case scenario in a bad economy. So,
right.
You know, most of my dealings was with Scott, and, you know, he was communicating with Jason, obviously, when he went to go visit him in jail. And the two times I wanted to go and visit Jason, because, you know, obviously I wanted to talk to him and,
right.
you know, just chat with him and just see how his spirits were in that. Well, the one day they had a riot at the jail, and the jail was on lockdown, so no one was allowed to visit. And then the second time I tried to go, he had his court date, and that was on Christmas Eve, and he got released. So, you know, and then it was, you know, easier just being able to talk face-to-face. So, you know, it definitely was a, you know, I'm sure a big eye-opener for a lot of people. And even for myself, you know, I didn't ever picture being in this position. But,
yeah.
I, you know, I like to feel like, one, you know, definitely gives people something to talk about. But, you know, two, I think at the end of the day, I want to feel like I can help be a positive influence on Jason. I mean, the kid has an incredible amount of talent. And, you know, maybe just with some good people around him and learning from some of his mistakes, you know, I'd like to see the team grow and get some credibility and not be thought of as, you know, maybe a C-grade team or, you know, a joke of a team. Because at the end of the day, there's people on that team that work really hard, just like any other team. And
yeah. Good point.
You know, I think people don't think that far down the road, and, you know, they often just want to kick someone when they're on the ground, you know. But, you know, my feeling is, you know, someone's on the ground, you know, give them a hand, pull them up, you know, help them get back on their feet. And, you know, why, you know, instead of seeing people in our sport fail, let's try and see people succeed and make the sport a better place for corporate America to come and sponsor and get money back involved and start changing the sport more towards NASCAR, because that's ultimately what's going to keep the sport alive and thriving, because it's definitely in a bad way right now. And I've seen too many good people sitting at home with no job and no work purely based on the fact that sales of bikes have gone down. You know,
right.
I understand that always is going to make a big impact on our sport, but, you know, if we had corporate America money, it wouldn't be that big a deal, and our sport would be a lot healthier. So, you know, at this, you know, I think over the years, my, you know, outlook towards racing has slowly changed. You know, as a kid, all I wanted to do was win and make money and all those things. And
right.
Now, for me, this is like an enjoyable, you know, journey, a round two, you know, just taking it all in and enjoying it. And, you know, I think Kevin Windham kind of described it to me after he came back from breaking his femur back in the day. And, you know, look how long this guy stretched his career out. I mean, he basically retired in 2002,
right.
Came back in 2003, and here we are in 2010, and he's podiuming in the first round. So,
yeah.
You know, it's amazing what the sport can do, and I'd like to see people be successful.
Right, right. I'm not going to let you go without asking you one tough question at least, and
yes,
that is what was it, what happened with Hamblin? I mean, he kind of put a cryptic post up on Vital MX about his feelings about kind of his departure from the team. What can you tell us about it, or what do you know, or what do you want to talk about it, or whatever?
I don't know a whole lot, and I'm not just saying that to try and dismiss the situation. I know Sean's definitely had a bit of a tough period of late, you know, just with some just, you know, issues and a lot of it dealing with financial things, and I don't want to discuss his personal problems over the year, but you know, I know a lot of his ride was based on a certain amount of money being provided by a certain individual, which at this point I don't think has, you know, whether it's the full amount or none at all, whatever, it's never really materialized, and it's mainly a budget thing. I'm not 100% sure why he's so upset about it. I mean, I'm sure he's somewhat upset in the fact that he's not at the races and that, but, you know, he's had a bike to ride and train, and I'm not sure 100% if he even really wanted to be ready for Supercross. I mean, it didn't really appear that way, and, you know, I've heard that he might be riding on the, you know, some of the East Coast rounds and maybe getting ready for the Outdoor Nationals, but like I said, you know, Sean's always been a friend of mine. I think, you know, with having, you know, some issues and just being frustrated, you know, he hasn't returned my last two phone calls, so I just figured I'd give him some space. You know, I don't think there was any reason why he should be mad at me. I've done nothing but help the guy in my life, so if he is mad at me, then in that case, I really don't care, you know, because I've done nothing to deserve that except help the guy. But I think he is frustrated, but I think it's maybe angled at one or two other individuals, and I'm not even 100% sure who. So
yeah, I don't know.
You know,
either.
My feeling is,
either.
If I don't know, I don't have to get involved. So I, you know, his deal is his deal. I can't worry about, you know, everyone else's problems. I've got enough on my own plate, and I hope it works out. You know, I hope it works out, and you know, maybe he was just talking more out of frustration than anything else.
Yeah, probably. I mean, he's a great rider. He's a good guy. So yeah, I'm with you. I hope it does work out, and I just wanted to kind of get. Getting a little bit of a scoop of what happened there, but GL, always a treat to have you on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I'd love to do one of these when you're not running errands, and we'll just talk about your career because there is so much to talk about. I would love to talk about the World Championships and your comeback, and of course,
absolutely.
You and I were teammates
absolutely.
For a year. There's a lot to talk about when you and I were teammates. That's for sure. And
that's for sure. I do remember. I do recall someone getting handcuffed at one point. So.
Yes. We could all get into that as well. But as for now, Grant, you did a great job on the weekend. I was thoroughly impressed. Tim Ferry and I wrote you off in our Supercross preview show, and looks like we got to eat poo because you're back and you're for real, no doubt about it. So
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Don't blame me for writing me off. I don't know if I would have put me in the top 10 either.
Well, that was the question. I mean, can he get top 10? And we were like, no, there's just no way. I mean, he can he? But, dude, I mean, you've been written off more times, you know, like, can he win a world title? No, he can't do that. Can he win a 125 national title? No, he can't do that. You know, he's not going to win a 450 title. That's for sure. You know what I mean? So.
Well, I think the best thing you can do is tell me that I can't do it.
Yeah.
I guarantee I'll go and prove you wrong. That'll be my ultimate goal, is to prove you wrong.
Yeah,
that's why I always like to take bets with people before the season, and they start predicting who's going to win what title or win races.
Right.
I always have to find someone that bets against me.
Yeah.
So that I can. That's the motivation I need. So, you know, I think the one thing that I've always been able to do is when it comes to race day or, you know, putting a game face on, I've always been able to pull something out of the bag in the mail. I could look bad in practice and qualifiers and everything, but it seems like when it comes time for all the marbles, I just have a tendency to be able to kind of just step it up that next level, just do that little bit extra to make it happen, and that's obviously a great quality to have, because there's so many talented riders. You got to have something, you know. You got to be able to bring that little bit extra on race day.
I agree 100%. I wish you didn't have it so much in the summer of 2007. Otherwise, there might be another guy with the number one plate at this point. But
that was game face. That was game face that year.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks again, and good luck this weekend. I'll see you. And
make
a date for doing another one of these, and we'll talk about everything. So.
All right, perfect. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, GL. See ya.
All right. See you. Bye-bye, guys.
This has been the BTOsports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as
The Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The Dogger, Ron Machine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. And, you know, and I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I pulled pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you'd sit there if you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I won't let this die. You know I've got this friend up in the atmosphere. Another reason not to fear this.